here in the UK, autumn is currently getting serious and reminding us all that the record-breaking Northern Hemisphere summer of 2018 is well and truly over. Despite worries about the warming climate, we will miss it. So we've sent Lizzie Gibney off to remind us all of warmer days by exploring the story of the sun.
Solar physics is something of a hot field of research right now, if you excuse the pun. In August, NASA launched the Parker Solar Probe, which is going to get closer to the sun than any craft design in history. European Space Agency is launching its own probe in 2020. So why the interest? Well, despite being the very hub of our solar system, as well as an influencer of life and culture on this planet, the sun is still something of a mystery. To learn more, I've come to London's Science Museum, where a new exhibition is opening this week on our nearest star, the sun, and humans' relationship with it. I'm going to meet curator Harry Cliff for a sneak preview. Hi, Harry, is it?
Yeah, hi. Hello. Susan, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. So what's the motivation then behind this exhibition? What made you want to do it?
So it's all about the sun, and the Science Museum has a great collection that kind of relates to the sun in all kinds of different ways. The problem with the subject in a way is it's so big, it touches almost every aspect of human history. So trying to distill it down to something manageable was the real challenge at the beginning. And the story we've gone for is the way that our relationship with the sun has changed through history, from the Bronze Age right up to the Space Age, but through the lens of science, technology and medicine.
So where do we begin?
So we start off with this rather beautiful screen. So this is showing a live feed of footage of the sun over the last 24 hours. What you can see here is the sun in extreme ultraviolet light. And as soon as you look at this, you see the sun is not a sort of static source of light. It's dynamic. You can see there's all kinds of things going on its surface. There's magnetic field lines bursting up from sunspots. You've got the atmosphere is constantly sort of moving around and changing. You can see around the edge of the sun this kind of hazy halo, which is the corona, which is a region of superheated plasma. You can see sunspots, which are the sort of regions where you have these bright magnetic filaments looping out from the surface of the sun.
Fantastic. It looks very dramatic. So how long have people been studying the sun as the centre of our solar system?
You can find evidence of ancient Greek philosophers who argued that the sun was the centre, but they never really gained much traction. It was Aristotle's view of the universe with the Earth at the centre that really became the dominant model. So the idea that the sun is the centre of the solar system only really starts to become widely accepted from the 16th century onwards, when Copernicus publishes On the Revolution of Heavenly Spheres in 1543. But it's not this instantaneous change in our view of the universe. It takes a century for his ideas to become refined and accepted, ultimately with the contributions of other people like Galileo and Kepler and Newton. So this sort of the next phase of the exhibition is kind of actually saying something that in a way is quite obvious, but also we've totally forgotten, which is that time is solar. So our very concept of time really ultimately comes from the sun. And for most of history, if you wanted to know what the time was, you looked at the sky and you looked for where the sun was in the sky. And because we're surrounding ourselves now by machines and by digital devices, we've kind of forgotten that basic fact.
Is there still any link at all? Or do we just measure time digitally nowadays?
Well, so one of the objects we have over here in this showcase is an atomic clock. So in the 1960s, the global time standard moved away from astronomical time based on the Earth's rotation and moved to atomic clocks, which are much more precise. And that's because the Earth actually doesn't rotate perfectly. It wobbles and it changes. So you find that the Earth will lose or gain certain amounts of time depending on what's going on its surface. The only link that's maintained is that we have these things called leap seconds. So every 6 months, people compare the time according to atomic clocks with time according to the universe, to astronomy, and if they find things have drifted by more than a second, they add or subtract a second from atomic time to keep it in step.
Ah, so this looks like we've leapt a little bit further forward into the future.
Yeah, so this is quite an interesting story, and it really begins at the end of the 19th century when Robert Koch and Niels Rydberg Finsen discover that sunlight has bactericidal properties, particularly that it can be used to kill tuberculosis bacteria. And you get special hospitals, sanatoria set up, where children and patients can be put out onto a sun deck and they're actually left in the sunshine. So TB lesions on the skin are then treated using natural sunlight.
So that wasn't an old wives' tale, that actually did have
no,
an impact.
No, it does have an impact. But you also get a certain amount of quackery that comes out of this. So this really strange object, which is a big wooden human-sized box with mirrors on the inside and light bulbs. This is an artificial light bath, electric light bath. It was invented by John Harvey Kellogg of Kellogg's Cornflakes fame for his sanatoria in the 1930s and 40s. So the idea is you sit inside this box, the doors close, the lights are switched on, and it blasts you with light. And that's supposed to treat all kinds of ailments from a bad back to, you know, diabetes, whatever you like. There's very little evidence it did anything apart from warm you up and possibly risk electrocution. I'm not sure I'd want to get in it, to be honest.
Me neither. It looks a bit like a torture chamber.
Yeah.
So, of course, the sun is not all good for people's health.
No, and this is only really realised in the 50s, 60s, 70s. You get a huge increase in melanoma cases as a result of everyone being told in the 30s and 40s, go out and get as much sun as possible. So this section is all about our attempts to harness the sun to drive machines, to power our industries. So in the 1870s, particularly in France, you have engineers who are already thinking, what happens when coal runs out? How are we going to power the world? This is a finite resource. And they start to build solar-powered machines. And there's a big exposition in Paris where, very famously, Auguste Bouchot and Fifre display this large solar engine, which is used to power a printing press that prints off this solar journal, and it kind of amazes the crowds, turning light into mechanical power. So we've got here, we think, the oldest solar-powered machine in existence.
And how does it work?
So it's a parabolic dish that focuses sunlight onto a heat engine that warms it up and then uses the heat generator to drive a little engine. Actually, there's even an egg cup attachment, so you can use it to boil an egg if you wanted to, or cook an egg.
You can do an awful lot with a bit of light.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
you concentrate it enough.
There's that famous incident a few years ago with the 20 Fenchurch Street in London. This new skyscraper that was built with a concave surface that focused the sun's light onto a guy's BMW or something and melted the car. So yeah, the sun's very powerful, and if you concentrate it, you can cause all kinds of mischief. We're trying with this experiment to remind people this thing is really fundamental, and, you know, actually so much of what we take for granted comes from the sun.
That was Harry Cliff talking to Lizzie Gibney at the Science Museum in London, England.